So welcome to the More Than Digital Marketing podcast, a podcast about digital marketing and so much more. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Jack. I'm joined today by...
I'm Luke.
And I'm Matt.
Welcome. And welcome again. This is episode 3 today. And we're actually recording on a different day today. Normally record on a Thursday. Today is Tuesday. We missed last week. What happened, Luke?
I slipped a disc and tore 3 muscles in my back.
How are you feeling now?
I was essentially mobile for an entire week.
Bedridden?
Yeah.
Couch ridden?
I had to get my wife to put my socks on.
Oh, God.
Point, and I'd never felt more demeaned in my entire life. But I'm moving, I'm mobile, and we're back.
You're digital marketing ready.
I am digital ready. For the most part.
For the most part. How was last week, Matt?
Yeah, good. Yeah, very busy, as always. But yeah, picking up the latest trends and things. But yeah. Very good. Very good.
Yeah, start of the month is always really busy. And so is the end of the month. And then the middle of the month tends to be really busy as well.
It's agency life, really, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. So yeah, last week is kind of reports for us, putting together reports for clients. Sprinkled in with a lot of meetings with clients to go over reports, talk about the different things that have been happening in their accounts. And then, yeah, sort of middle of the month for us tends to be just delivery, doesn't it?
Yeah, so like start of the month as well is obviously planning what we're going to deliver for the rest of the month. And then, like you say, middle of the month is delivering on the things that we've planned for delivery for the month.
So you kind of... And also researching podcast talking points, right?
Oh, yeah. In between. I mean, that's just every day, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. It's not like we leave this to the last minute ever.
No, never. Never. speaking of leaving things to the last minute. No. Speaking of podcast, some of the different things that we pulled together this week, we've kind of reflected on the different elements that we've been touching on so far. Mainly the metaverse. That was a big thing I wanted to talk about in today's episode. And we've also got, what are some of the other things we're going to talk about today?
That Chrome are introducing an ad blocker to block your ad blocker.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think Meta introducing some new ad formats across Facebook and Instagram.
Cool. Well.
I guess we could, as a little touching point as well, like the ad-supported tier of Netflix and whether we think that's a good idea or a bad idea.
Well, I mean, is advertising a bad idea? I'm sure we'll get into our thoughts minds. On that.
I feel like this is one of those things that Luke will have his opinion on first, and then by the time we talk around it, he will have changed his mind.
Yeah, we'll Maybe. See. We'll see if we can do
I'm
that.
I'm in two minds with it at the minute, which I'll touch on.
Great. Hopefully you'll come down on one side of the argument.
We'll see. Doubt it.
Okay, well, let's jump into it then. The first thing we wanted to talk about is the metaverse. There was a really great interview with Tim Cook, who's CEO of Apple, where in the interview, which was from 9 to 5 Mac, he had said that he wasn't really sure if the average person could actually tell you what the metaverse is or was. And I think we evidenced that quite well last time when we were talking about the metaverse and I threw out the question, what actually is it that we're talking about? And yeah, we were a bit sort of taken aback by the fact that we'd never really thought about what we actually considered to be the metaverse and what we would actually define it as being. So I thought it would be a really interesting thing to sort of circle back to talk about the metaverse as a whole and what do we actually think it is, and then maybe go a bit deeper from there. So
I've been trying to look at layman's terms for it and how to describe the metaverse in a kind of sentence. And I posed the idea to Matt just before the podcast, but I thought I'd bring it up to you now.
That sure.
Essentially, I feel like the metaverse is World of Warcraft or MMOs in general on steroids and
okay.
infiltrating everything. Because you create your kind of like virtual area and you go buy virtual houses and do virtual games and things like that, which feels very World of Warcraft, but you can also be advertised that as well.
Yeah, I could buy into that.
Real life things.
Yeah, I saw the article and the interview, and I essentially read that I continue to be an average person because I don't know what the metaverse is. But actually, it was quite a good explanation, and I think we'll come on to another article from the Guardian as well that sort of explains a little bit around what it is, but and what it sort of includes. Yeah, it feels like it's this holistic term that encompasses quite a lot of things. I think the example in the article sort of suggested that it's similar to the term cyberspace, right?
Yeah.
Which is made up of many different building blocks. So difficult to define something like that. That's how I feel about the metaverse still.
Yeah, and I think it was this idea that if you unplugged that word metaverse and then replaced it with the word cyberspace, like you just have this word that's kind of just this buzzword that doesn't actually really mean anything, and it's just kind of something that people latch onto, and suddenly everything's the metaverse. And like you were saying, World of Warcraft is the metaverse. And I think in that same article there was an example of just using Google and saying, oh, Google's the internet. And it's like, Google's a part of the internet, but it doesn't necessarily represent the internet as a whole. And that's kind of maybe what Meta is trying to do, to sort of put themselves as being the forefront of the metaverse. Sort of following on from what you were saying, like I was thinking about how I would try and explain or define what the metaverse is. And sort of like you come up against this sort of, I guess, obstacle or wall where basically the metaverse technically doesn't even exist yet, according to some people. So you're trying to define something that is in the future by like present standards. And so you're already like at a loss trying to explain something that even doesn't exist. But yeah, basically the way that I at least understand it is the metaverse is a digital realization, sort of a digital space that you can go and enter as an avatar, and that doesn't necessarily have to be VR, and it doesn't have to be AR, so augmented reality. So in your example, like World of Warcraft or even something like Fortnite, that's something you could just sit on your couch and play, you know, on a TV. So you don't have to be wearing a headset, but it's the case that you have this sort of digital representation of you in a digital space.
And am I right in thinking that it sort of includes an example, like it's something that is continually sort of running in the background, rather than something you sort of engage with, you turn on and then you turn off, and sort of that's it. Whereas it feels like the metaverse is something that is, even if you're not engaged, sort of that world and that time sort of continually runs in the background, and you check in and out sort of, you know, in a 24-hour session, I guess.
Yeah, I'd buy into that 100%.
Which kind of brings it back a little bit to the kind of the World of Warcraft sort of thing as well, of like things are happening within WoW, whether you're there or not. So like certain monsters will appear at certain times of the day or whatever have you, or like there's auctions where you can buy specific houses or weaponry or things like that that are all happening. It's just being applied to not a fantasy world, more of a real world example. So you can, these auctions for like houses and things like that could potentially be auctions for actual real life houses that you can go and walk around in the metaverse and visit things. And yeah, it's kind of a being described as like the next evolution of a key point in the next evolution of the internet. And potentially what we're seeing is the kickoff of Web3.
Well, yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah, I guess like, you know, its name, Metaverse Universe, it's ever expanding and ever evolving, without trying to get too sort of philosophical onto the point. But, you know, it's something that's just going to keep growing and growing, and seeing how different brands are using it is really cool.
So do we feel that we have a better handle on what the metaverse is now?
Yeah, I think from the research I've done, I've kind of got a bit more of an idea of it. I don't really still understand the point or how it works necessarily.
Sure.
But then I also play quite a lot of MMOs, so I'm actively partaking in a version of the metaverse, essentially.
Sure, and by MMO you mean
massive multiplayer online games, like World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy 14, for example.
Sure.
So I am going into and participating in what could be seen as an initial building block for the metaverse. So
I think the biggest issue is when you put a name to something, suddenly it has, like, you have to describe it and it has to have connotations, but it means different things to different people, and different people interact with these things in different ways. So that sort of brings challenges in and of itself. But yeah, I think for me, the biggest challenge in sort of trying to unpack this is because it means different things to different people. You do talk to a lot of people, because I've been asking a lot of people after the last podcast, what is the metaverse? Do you know what it is? And just sort of seeing what people's reactions are, and the number of people that are saying, I've never been to the metaverse or never done it because I don't have a headset. And, you know, I've never tried VR before, and all these sorts of things. And really, you know, the more that you dig into it, the more that you understand that it isn't VR, and it is more than that. But again, people are interacting with these things in different ways.
Yeah, and I think that more people have partaken in the metaverse than you realize. Yeah. And you've been part of it without realizing that you're part of it, for example. So, like, as I mentioned kind of last time, my nephews have got more of a clue up of what the metaverse is than me, because they play Roblox and he's 7.
Yeah.
And he's got much more of an idea. But at the same time, Fortnite is considered part of the metaverse, and that's something that most people have played at this point, given, like, if you've got a PlayStation, you've probably dipped into, or an Xbox, probably dipped into Fortnite at least once to kind of give it a bash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think those, like you say, if you've been to those concerts and things that happen in things like Fortnite, that is an experience of the metaverse, right? So yeah, I think you're right. I think people are sort of engaged without realizing necessarily that they're engaging with this thing. But it feels like sort of it's just going to continue snowballing.
Just being aware that the camera was on, both Luke and I were nodding at what Matt was saying silently.
Yeah.
So if you're watching the video version of this, you might see that. But yeah, no, we were agreeing with what you were saying, Matt.
But you're dead on as well. And like you say about going to those events within Fortnite, for example, I mean, an entire piece of Star Wars plot from the latest trilogy happened only in Fortnite, which explained how Emperor Palpatine was back. And if you missed that, you went into that third film going, oh yeah, spoilers for Star Wars. it's been long enough now. You go into that guy and all you got was, somehow Palpatine is back. And it's like, okay, but how?
Yeah, and I dare say that was the only problem with that film. You know, if you played Fortnite, you know, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
moving on. one of my questions I wanted to loop back, that because we're talking about the metaverse again, I wanted to throw out the question of, How come this sort of this conversation, this idea of the metaverse, how do we think the metaverse is really going to help clients in a digital space and our, you know, day-to-day people that we interact with?
I think there are going to be some interesting advertising opportunities within the metaverse. Last week we talked about Walmart adding in some sort of brand elements into Roblox. Their, you know, digital assets, the buying and selling of digital assets. We won't necessarily get onto NFTs, but you can see how big global brands are, you know, using those kind of things. A Starbucks example came up. So it's very new, but I think, you know, you can start to see how users, brands are utilizing the metaverse, and I think it will just become more and more accessible.
Yeah, and it's kind of using this online space to divert, to show your personality as well. And people are buying into these brands to show their personality. So to very briefly touch on something you popped in our Slack channel, you can buy NFTs of Build-A-Bear to add to your kind of your metaverse presence to show your personality in the metaverse there. And it's sort of going across that thing as well, and that's another revenue generator for something like Build-A-Bear to do. For like the clients that we kind of work with and things like that, I think that you shouldn't shy away from looking at how you can kind of partake in the metaverse. I think that the Walmart example and the Starbucks example are ideas of big long games with huge budgets that are unsustainable for 99.9% of businesses that aren't Starbucks or Walmart, but you should still kind of take a look at what you can do as part of the metaverse, and kind of how you can easily fit into these like the definition of Web3, because the sooner you look into it and the sooner you start to kind of take a punt at advertising within these areas, the better, because as we kind of discussed at length, it's becoming Web3, so it's only a matter of time before you have no choice. And if you're not looking now and you're not doing the research in how you can be part of the metaverse, you risk being left behind when the advertising that we've currently got to hand almost becomes defunct.
Yeah, and I think the thing to keep in mind as well is that the metaverse is online, and there's no real cost to entry, I suppose. It's about being smart and just trying to identify those opportunities and find the ways that you can participate. And I guess it all comes down again to, like with most things, who is your audience and where are they and what's the best way to engage with them? Because if you can nail that, and as we've kind of like talked about, this is all sort of evolving at the moment and moving forwards. But yeah, if you can find your audience, then I think that will help you to sort of like work out the best way to approach this.
For sure. And there's going to be a point as well where these big worldwide events and things like that are happening in the metaverse are going to become more localized, right? So you'll be able to sponsor a gig local to an area or an event from a speaker or things like that, and your brand is out there and going across that. So there's kind of things where you kind of just got at this point take a punt on it and sort of learn about it, but you have to do that at this stage, I would say, because you will get left behind, because Gen Z are blind to the majority of advertising that goes out now, and it's been shown that they're just kind of, they will just ignore it. And whilst Gen Z are still fairly young audience, time will pass and they won't be a young audience soon. They'll be the key decision makers of lots of places, and this is how we're going to be contacting those people. I remember kind of talking around the subject a little bit here, but when I was younger, my dad was like always telling me that, oh, you'll grow out of watching YouTube videos and gaming, and it's like, that's never happened. And so advertising that appears to me within those areas is things that hits me the most.
Yeah.
So hitting these areas that Gen Z are in is going to be the kind of the next step forward, really.
I think it's really interesting, that sponsorship that you mentioned. Like you say, you can sponsor concerts, you can sponsor talks and things like that. I think that's a great way that potentially brands can get their name out there. But I was thinking about other sort of examples. If there you can acquire assets and things, there's probably opportunity for, say, clothing brands to offer specific styles in the metaverse, or automotive brands to offer, you know, branded cars and things like that in the metaverse. So you can own that Ferrari that you really want to in real life, but it will just be sort of a digital asset.
But where does it get stored?
That is a whole other question.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. We'll come back next week for Metaverse 2.0. Yeah, we're not going to bore anyone to death anymore with the metaverse. I think it's such a deep topic, and there's so much to talk about, and there's so much to get into. But really, I guess the point to come back to is that it's growing, it's evolving, it's changing. But I think the point that I wanted to make at least was that it's not headsets. It's much, much more than that. It's not just being in a VR space. It is, as you've said, Luke, moving towards that web 3.0. And we've kind of just got to be aware of that, I think.
Absolutely. It's becoming where we used to just Google things and end up on a site. It's becoming a point of, you'll be on one of these platforms and you'll walk to someone's website and explore what they've got on offering that way around instead, which is, yeah, it's crazy to see, but also I'm quite excited for seeing how it all pans out, and kind of how everything changes within marketing and advertising, as well as the general internet. But like you say, it's not just Ready Player One. You don't have to be like sat in an Animus and kind of in a pod, for example, to experience it. You can just, like, we're on laptops here for people watching. That will be it. That's all we'll need to kind of do for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, really interesting what you say as well, just generally, like thinking about teaching, learning, you know, medical, things as well. So, yeah.
Great.
That's actually quite an interesting point, actually. Just to keep going on about
that. No, keep going.
I never really thought about it from a teaching and learning perspective, but you're right. That will give quite a lot of people around the world access to better education and better avenues to kind of learn from, because they'll be able to do it via the metaverse and not have to kind of move to go to Oxford or something. They can join in from these lectures from here. So you could potentially see that degrees come through the metaverse as well.
Is this you making a 180 here? You're coming around to the metaverse?
I've always been on.
Oh, good.
I've always been on board with the metaverse. In my head, I have, but
I think it just shows that like the scope of it, and it's like we said at the beginning, it's not one thing that's definable. It's many, many different building blocks put together that are just ever expanding. But it's now, right? It's happening now. So
sure, and I guess it would almost be impossible to try and like put the internet sort of like in its early days to try and explain what the internet was to someone. But now we kind of live with it day to day and like can't live without it. And I dare say that it's going to get to that point with the metaverse, but maybe it will. Who knows?
I was just going to say, I also couldn't define the internet.
Even today. I'm not going to ask that question. So
you're right. When at the early days of the internet, people were going, you have to be on Google or you won't be found. And people were poo-pooing the idea that you had to be on Google. And now it's kind of... we're at a point where it's like you have to be on the metaverse because otherwise you will be left in the dust.
Well, yeah, definitely. But we're still at the early stages, but it is just a case of understanding what it is and understanding the opportunity. And I think that's probably the most important thing to consider. So next, what are we talking about next, Luke?
Next up, what have we got on the list of things? I'm just firing up.
We can move on to talk about Chrome extensions.
Yeah. So the ad blocker blocker.
The ad blocker blocker. So basically Chrome, for anyone who uses Chrome, there are extensions within Chrome that you can add to your Chrome internet browser that allow you to do things in a much more interesting and streamlined way. So adding particular sort of functionality or different apps that integrate with Chrome that make your life a lot easier. Some of those extensions are ad blockers, which essentially block all advertising on websites that you visit. And I was really surprised, actually, sort of several years ago, I was with a group of people and we were all online and they were complaining about the fact that their ad blockers weren't working. I was like, you use ad blockers? Really? And yeah, I was quite naive to the fact that I just assumed people didn't use them, but actually quite a lot of people do. What's your sort of experiences with ad blockers?
I have previously used them, but don't anymore. I know. That's why I don't anymore. I can see why people would.
I can see my ad blocker running right now when I look at my laptop. I have ad blockers installed on everything and block all sorts of ads because I browse a lot of sites that will have full page ads a lot of the time. Mm. Sites like IGN, where they'll have full app branded takeovers, and it just annoys me. And I sit there going, oh, paid advertising really irritates me as a paid media specialist.
Yep.
But I use ad blockers for everything. Things like I hate watching YouTube on the telly if there's like too many ads. Like I was watching one the other day and it was like every 4 minutes there was a 2 minute ad break, and it started to irritate me from that point of view.
They definitely push you to the point of how many ads can we show you for how long before you stop watching. And somebody's crunched those numbers. Some algorithm has crunched those numbers. And they know exactly, you know, how many ads that you can ultimately watch before you get turned off.
I like my ad blockers, and I very much, when I was looking into this and about how they're going to start blocking ad blockers, the first thing I did was download Firefox so that I could still run with an ad blocker and not, my instant reaction was to just leave Chrome and just to move back to something that I could still run an ad blocker for.
So to add a bit more context to this, the ad blocker blockers, so they're essentially going to be releasing a new update to their extension platform on Google Chrome. So this is going to be a manifest version 3. So they're currently on manifest version 2 extensions. And apparently once we get to January 2024, they're going to have updated to the point where manifest version 2 extensions won't be supported anymore.
So I was reading this and it feels like it's, from a Google point of view, it's for privacy and security, right? And there are sort of you know, they perceive that there are issues around that with the Manifest V2 extensions. But I think some of the sort of people against this are just sort of saying, you know, why not just make V2 more secure, right?
Yeah.
So it feels like, and I think reading the article has sort of come through, you know, it's a way just for Google to broaden the visibility of their ads through the platform, right?
And make more revenue, right? That's the, like, call a spade is to make, they want to make more revenue off their ads and get in front of more people.
Well, yeah, and that's the biggest problem in this. When you've got a platform like Google that are arguably the largest advertiser in the world, who have control over things like this, when they want to make sure that people can see their ads so that, you know, they're getting their paycheck at the end of the day, like, it all raises a lot of question marks over a lot of decisions, where it's always a case of, is this really about privacy, as you were saying, Matt, and security, or are we talking about the fact that you're not getting paid?
It definitely feels like it's an inventory issue, right?
Yeah. To me,
especially when sort of one of the final points in that article mentions how things like some of the privacy protective tracker blockers will not be able to work anymore. So things that you use to protect your privacy won't work under this new thing, and that's kind of being swept under the rug a little bit because they're blocking ad blockers.
Yeah.
When I feel like that's the bigger story potentially, because they're going, oh, it's for privacy, but they're not letting us have privacy apps installed as well, which seems just a bit weird.
Counterintuitive. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, speaking of advertising, this brings us on to another good point that you were that you raised, Luke, that you wanted to talk about the ad tiers for Netflix, and whether subscription services should remain free or not, which is always an interesting thing to talk about. It's, and it kind of circles back to what we were saying just before about how many adverts are you willing to sit through to actually watch the thing that you want to watch, and what is free worth to you?
I think if Netflix goes, if the ad supported tier is completely free and you can have access to Netflix's library but you have to watch ads, I'm on board. If it is a tier and you still have to pay and then get ads, I'm less on board. I hate Now TV for that, because I feel like for my £10 a month that I'm paying, I shouldn't have to sit through ad breaks for Now TV as well, because I'm paying you a subscription fee. So that is where I'm kind of at with it. It's sort of, if Now TV, for example, again, to use that, wants me to watch advertising, then don't charge me more than most of my subscription services cost to make, and then make me watch ads as well. Admittedly, their ads are broken at the minute and you just get a black screen and audio, but that's besides the point. And I feel like if they're going to charge people still, even if it's a lower cost, they're going to hemorrhage subscribers.
But isn't that just sort of like a normal, like, paid subscription model? Like, for example, if it was normal Sky, you're still paying for the dish and you're paying for the channels, but you still have to sit through like 5 minutes of ads every 10, 15 minutes. And we accepted that. So what's the difference?
We accepted that when there was no alternative. I have not watched, I've got the internet at my house, but I don't have any kind of TV provider anymore. I pay for like the TV license fee so I can watch the iPlayer, but I don't watch like Sky or kind of Virgin Media boxes anymore because I've got an alternative. There's so much content that I can consume for less than a Sky box subscription. I mean, for what's a Sky subscription now to get the dish and everything installed, like £40-50 a month?
I don't know, that sounds something like that, maybe.
£20 a month, you can get Disney Plus, Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And have all that content with no ads and no irritations kind of like taking you away from the content you want to consume. And because we've gotten into that binge watching culture now of sitting down and watching 10 hours of something without moving, the ads will break that up a little bit, which is necessarily a bad thing, but I think it will irritate people when they're looking at doing that, when they're already losing subscribers to things like Disney Plus and Amazon Prime, having better offerings and not cancelling their good shows. I think they'll hemorrhage subscribers pretty quickly.
I think I'm in a slightly different camp. I don't mind this. I think it's like other platforms, to be honest. I think of my Spotify account. I will pay a premium if I don't want to hear the ads. I appreciate that. I think some Spotify ads may still come through, but you know, but then if I don't want to pay, I think that, you know, I expect then to have the ads, which is totally fine. I think I'm coming from this from both a consumer and a marketer point of view. I can see that it's going to be absolutely massive for brands and advertising, and just completely being able to target people through these ads in a way that you just is so new when it comes to linear TV. I know we've got things like Sky AdSmart that I know some of our clients use and have had great success with, it just feels like it's that extension. If the price is right for me for Netflix, I'm on board with it. I think I would happily support ad-supported tiers here.
I'm actually one of those people that cancelled my Netflix about 6 months ago or whenever it was, because I just decided, you know what, you keep putting the price up and I don't think the value matches. So if they introduced an ad subscription tier, I might be more inclined. But just, yeah, some of the level, you know, the amount of stuff that they're bringing out on a regular basis, where it was kind of just a case of like, it's like a utility, I just pay it because I do. It got to the point where it was like, why am I paying this? Because it was just kind of like, I don't need to watch insert generic Netflix show here. What is it? What's the one that everyone talks about? The cake one? Is it cake? Yeah. That's the kicking bag for everyone when they talk about why Netflix is rubbish. So yeah, I decided after not watching Is It Cake, I cancelled my subscription.
I think that obviously this is, when they talk about it, it's to kind of try and bring lapsed subscribers back to the platform, right? And that's kind of what they want to do. They want to kind of introduce a cheaper / free tier where you watch ads and you come and subscribe to the platform again. Therefore, they make more revenue, et cetera, et cetera. I think they've got a lot more issues at Netflix at the moment than the price of the subscription fee, because like you say, like, you didn't watch Is It Cake, so you cancelled, for example. But the amount of shows that I've watched and I've got really invested in, and I get to the end and I look it up for the next season and I find out it's been cancelled, that's what's making me leave the platform, not the price of it. If I could get a resolution to some of the series that I'm actually watching and invested in, I'll probably stay on board a lot more. And it's not going to be a case of, oh, I'll just watch it because of the ads. I don't feel like that's going to solve the issue.
But if the ads come on, more subscribers join us, you know, at this sort of tiered rate, then Netflix will be making more revenue to be able to continue the series that you love, right?
Do we know that it's a free, are we talking free plus ads, or is it just ads at a reduced point of entry price for admission, or whatever you want to call it?
I don't know. There's been a couple of discussions about it. Some people have reported that it's going to be free with ads, which I am on board with, free with ads. Some people are saying that there is a cheaper supported subscription tier that you can do. Googling it then to triple check, within the last 24 hours, it looks like there's been a big movement in it, with them being predicted to make billions of dollars by selling ads, according to like JP Morgan and things like that. So I'm obviously in the kind of the smaller camp here that thinks that this is going to annoy people, when financiers and other marketers seem to think that this is going to make them a lot of money and cause a lot of people to come back.
Well, I imagine as well that there are a lot of people who are paying for it, who are on the edge, maybe to how I was like 6 months ago, where they're still paying for it because they've always paid for it and that's just the way that it is, because maybe they do want to watch It Is This Cake. But it could be a case that they introduce a free model and loads of people come out of their paid and into the free tier. But then that's, again, from what you were saying, Matt, from a marketing perspective and advertising perspective, that's great. Because it's more people that could potentially be marketed to and, you know, be reached ultimately.
Yeah, I think it just comes back to that value point. If they can get people on free and start having less reliance on driving revenue through you as a subscriber, and can supplement that through ads, and, you know, and then therefore make it potentially slightly cheaper for you as a user, then I think they will start seeing that spike. I think what's interesting in this, and there's a few different things, aren't there? So it looks like Disney Plus are going to go to this sort of model later on. So I think that was touted for end of this year or early next year. So it feels like, you know, Netflix are trying to get ahead of the game and push this through. And then other subscription services will then just follow. So then it will just be something, you know, in time, give it 12 months, we'll just be used to again, like Jack, you said about Sky TV and having that as a service. The other thing is around the cost to the advertiser, potentially. So in the report that we were reading, it's coming out as potentially quite expensive against other platforms. So I think that that'll be an interesting thing to see if people, advertisers, then start seeing value in the advertising side of it. Because it all comes together in terms of ultimately driving that revenue back to Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And obviously, I think that they will see quite a lot of good come from the actual advertising, because let's face it, when you're into a really good TV series, you're so engaged with everything that's on your screen. If you suddenly get hit by an ad, you're probably going to still be quite engaged with that app, that sort of 30-second ad among your 8 hours of watching, I don't know, The Haunting of Hill House, for example.
Yeah.
So you'll probably be a bit more receptive to that. So from a marketer's perspective, I think that advertising on the platform will work really strongly.
I think the targeting is just going to be massive as well for it. So again, potentially a really accessible way to run TV ads on these platforms, and just much easier for brands to start doing so.
Yeah, and I guess in terms of that targeting aspect, certain types of people watch certain types of shows at certain times of the day, and with all of the conversations we've had around privacy and how much that's impacted, and you start to sort of use your better judgment to know what sorts of people are going to be watching TV at certain times of day, so you could potentially choose a window at a hopefully good price point or price point of entry that, yeah, you can actually reach some people for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Speaking of advertising all over, everywhere, all the time, I think, Luke, you added an article about Meta advertising everywhere, including public profiles.
Yeah, so we kind of touched on this very briefly a minute ago about kind of how marketers can connect with Gen Z in these emerging virtual worlds, which was a good article, I thought, from Marketing Dive. And they were talking about how it's basically the big, long game to kind of reach Gen Z. So we kind of touched on it a little bit, but it's kind of how we spoke about it with Walmart, about how they're kind of utilizing Walmart World to build brand trust among people who are going to be decision makers in a few years, etc., and completely change how they're viewed as a company, because we were kind of likened them to, say, you know what you're getting with Walmart, it's kind of the cheaper option, it's not going to be your Waitrose, it's more like a Lidl kind of America, essentially. But how they're kind of twisting that a little bit, building Walmart World, showing how much you can get in Walmart, how upmarket it can be, and things like that. And I think that building that trust among these people is such a long game play, but in a few years, maybe a decade, it's really going to pay off for Walmart and kind of completely shift how people view their brand. And to be honest, I looked at some pictures of Walmart World, and it does look really cool, and something that I would actually like to kind of walk through and
What makes it for you?
It just looks really intuitive, and I quite like the idea that eventually their kind of platform is that you can use the metaverse, such as Roblox, to go and visit Walmart World, do your grocery shopping, and then have someone come and bring your groceries to you, bringing us ever closer to never having to leave the house ever again.
I was going to say, that sounds slightly what the Pixar film Wall-E, where everyone's just sitting in chairs. Is that going to be our future? Just
maybe chairs. That's Web3.
Maybe. Web 3.0, you'd never leave your chair.
Yeah.
Not that I'm promoting that, or I think that that sounds great. I'm not.
Oh, dear. Yeah, so that's kind of on that, really, and kind of how it's just everywhere at the minute. And as we say, like, without going on the metaverse too much, it's the next big thing. And I hate myself for saying and referring to it as the next big thing. And I died a little inside saying it, but it is kind of the next big thing.
We're going to have to rename the podcast.
Yeah.
More than the metaverse.
More than the metaverse.
More than the next big thing.
Yeah. Speaking of, actually, about the next big thing, we spoke briefly on the last podcast about YouTube Shorts copying essentially TikTok and how Instagram Reels have essentially copied TikTok and things like that. Well, now it seems that everyone's copying Be Real. So TikTok have are introducing something called like TikTok Now, where you have like 5 minutes to take a front and back photo on your camera or a video on your camera and show where you are now to kind of, and they're calling it as a bid to ensure that TikTokers are more transparent with what they're actually up to over like the highly edited kind of videos and images that people get on TikTok and Instagram. Instead, you've got to be quite a lot more candid. Realistically, it's because Be Real has been the number one free app on all the app stores for about 6 months now. I was reading a really interesting article about it earlier that Be Real has had 43 million lifetime downloads and 41 million of them have been this year alone.
Wow, crazy.
So it's just absolutely exploded. So TikTok are kind of coming in and going, that's what we want. And I feel like Be Real might fade away if TikTok pull it off.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for a lot of these social media companies is that there's always something new, and the struggle with Gen Z, not to sort of like have any sweeping generalizations or anything, because that's not what this podcast is about, but they have a very short attention span and things move so quickly because they're in this digital space all the time that it's sort of, okay, great, this has been fun, but what's next? And they're always looking for the next sort of big thing. And so that doesn't surprise me too much that TikTok's great. I enjoyed it for 6 months to a year, but that's old hat. What's next? Mm. And I feel like saying even something like old hat makes me sound old. But I'm not old. It's fine. do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And they're always looking for the next big thing.
I think the other thing with Gen Z, and again, not making sweeping generalizations here or not meaning to, is that they really value authenticity as well. And it feels like Be Real, to an extent, offers that authenticity across social media. I mean, we've all seen the Instagram versus reality posts, right? Where people compare what they put on social media versus, you know, their real life. And I think Be Real potentially bridges the gap, although I have heard instances where people will get, you know, they won't post, or they'll post an old picture or whatever it is on Be Real, just to appear that they're doing something more fun potentially than they actually are. It's not something that I've engaged with, but that's, you know, it gives that sense to me. It's interesting, coming back to the story, that and I was reading this in Marketing Dive, that TikTok is now copying another platform, whereas it had been so used to Meta, or, you know, Facebook and Instagram and other apps copying what they're doing. So I think, yeah, I think that was really interesting as well.
It's funny how it's come full circle like that, of them batting back competition, copying them, to being the competition, copying someone else. And in that article as well, I thought that from a marketing perspective, you can't advertise on Be Real at the minute. The infrastructure's not there, but the infrastructure is there on TikTok, and it's already got a thriving kind of advertising presence. And I think that if you're in the kind of the battle of the brands, as it were, and Be Real suddenly start to advertise, or they were looking at making it a paid app subscription service again, that TikTok might win that battle, because if you're on TikTok, you're used to the ads at this point already. And in terms of kind of like that battle, I think that Be Real might risk the loss if they try and go down that route. Whereas at the moment, they're going to win because they haven't got an ad tier, they haven't got a subscription service, but they're also very restricted on the income that's coming through. But yeah, it's an interesting
Yeah, I think ultimately when you can do everything you want to through one platform, that's what people want, essentially. They don't want to be jumping from one app to the other to the other to do essentially very similar things. I don't really have a way to end that point. But
so that's why the metaverse is good, because eventually it will all be within that one metaverse app that everyone will have on their phones and laptops and things like that. And you'll probably at one point use the metaverse to walk to someone's Instagram profile and walk around their photos. And
what an exciting future.
It's very Ready Player One.
I mean, the company that establishes that one app that is all encompassing, then, you know, I just can't wait for that day. I hate having multiple different Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I'm not on Be Real. TikTok, I do have a TikTok account, but there's just so many, and they just keep popping out of the woodwork, don't they? So,
and it makes me blind to what I'm already on. So like the amount of times I've closed down Instagram to go on Instagram because there's so many apps that do different things, and I was like, what was I doing?
Instagram.
I close down Instagram and load it back up, or I'll close down Twitter to load it back up. It's like, why am I doing
just
this?
Just need that endorphin hit.
Yeah.
I don't have a good segue into the next one from that, but I think next we can talk about Fatface. And they had, they've had a good start to September, I think it was, because they've had a new campaign based off, is it social proofing?
Yeah, so this is something that I found and shared. I found it quite interesting. Funnily enough, it's this topic around reviews and social proof has been something that I've just been talking a lot about recently. So it piqued my interest when I saw this come into my inbox earlier last week. Essentially, what it is Fatface have incorporated UGC based social proof messaging, so that's user generated content, as part of their sort of reviews of products. So not only do you get the 5 out of 10, 4.5 sort of star rating, you also get a proportion of people that have also recommended it or would recommend that. So you get a 5-star review plus 90% of people recommend, or it's true to size, or whatever it might be. And I just found it a really interesting way of looking at the small gains that you can make across your website and, you know, other digital channels to drive conversion. I think we all know that reviews build trust for a brand and are great for sort of your digital PR footprint. And I think previously you could get things like rich snippets based on reviews, so visibility of ratings and things. But yeah, it's just sort of innovating the way that brands are using review data to drive people further through the conversion funnel, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, and so this campaign went live at the start of September, and apparently in just 10 days, they had a 1.71% increase in their conversion rate. So that's really impressive. And I think it just goes to show just how important these trust signals are to people. And especially if you're buying clothes online, that's always, I won't buy shoes online because they're really hard to get right. And every time I've ever done it, I always get it wrong. Because it's so hard sometimes. Every different, although you might have a certain size, it's different in different makes of clothes and whatever it might be. So the fact that you can add those trust signals, and as you said, Matt, true to fit or whatever things you might be able to say that really help to kind of, I guess, get people over the line who are a bit more unsure over certain elements like that.
That 1.71 conversion rate is a crazy uplift in conversion rate considering the volume of traffic that Fatface will get. Mm.
Yeah, and just 10 days as well. So it's not even long into the actual campaign to be seeing such impressive improvements is really good.
It builds such a good level of trust, that kind of user-generated content, doesn't it? Because like you say, it's real people having real experiences with things, and kind of building that level of trust among consumers is, we keep saying it, but it's really important to kind of have. And we're in a trust-based society at the minute where, well, I mean, clearly they've done that and their conversion rate shot up.
Yeah, it's just good for loyalty, retention, and ultimate customer satisfaction, I guess. Yeah, I think the trust metrics are super important, and not just from a top level brand point of view, but now you're seeing it from driving actual sales and revenue. And yeah, you know, that 1.71% increase is great to see in 10 days. Be interesting to see what happens over time. But yeah, and we all know, again, that word of mouth recommendation is super important for, you know, as a referral. So just incorporating it onto your website,
yeah,
is definitely a really obvious way of getting that sort of in front of people.
Well, that was going to be my next question, just in terms of thinking about sort of more in terms of our client base, what are some things that people could really be thinking about when we're talking about trust signals? This is obviously FatFaze, much bigger, you know, very big company. They have a lot of budget available to implement a lot of big changes that are going to have this kind of a big impact. But when we're sort of thinking more about our client base and trust signals, for me, it's just making sure things like reviews are really visible. You know, be that on something like Google My Business and encouraging people to leave reviews, yeah, or even on the website, incorporating, if you've got an e-commerce website, you can use different, what's the one that I'm thinking of that you can sort of add stars to?
Trustpilot?
Yeah, Trustpilot, thank you. So adding Trustpilot to your e-commerce site, I think you could do that through Shopify quite easily. Testimonials, really important. Any other ideas for that?
I think, making it really easy to leave reviews for your guests. So making sure you've potentially got automated emails that go out post-purchase, or, you know, if you're in a, say, holiday industry, you could do it on a post-booking and then post-holiday type arrangement. But you can do it on an automated way, so it just makes it easier for those consumers to do it. And then just continue to promote it. I think testimonials are great, but I think we need to make sure that brands are being really open with, you know, all the reviews that they're getting, so as not to appear disingenuous. Like I said, just promote it across channels, make sure it's, you know, in the footer of your website, use it as a key selling point, put it on in the footer of your emails, on your social channels, just keep reaffirming your position that you are a trusted brand.
Yeah, and something to add there as well is that when you're thinking of reviews, most people, when they're looking at reviews, will not read the 5 stars. They'll always read the 1s and maybe the 2s if they exist, but people are quite binary and it's just the best experience or the worst experience. So they'll go and they'll read the 1-star reviews, and unfortunately that happens to everyone, but it's more, as a business, how do you deal with that? And that's also something people like to see, if people also accept that people are quite binary. So if you've been left a 1-star review, how do you as a business actually deal with it? And I think that that's always quite telling.
Yeah, and having this in place to kind of just show the number of people that rated an item 5 stars kind of goes, combats that a little bit and goes, okay, so if you're going to read all the 1-star and 2-star reviews, this is how many people, the percent, like 99.9% of people have loved it, kind of is a bit of a battle against that. What I think is really interesting about this as well is you kind of mentioned at the beginning of that there, Jack, that FatFaze are a massive business and have got like oodles of marketing budget. But the things that they've put in place are such a basic thing that,
yeah,
any business could realistically add this to their website. It's not something that's going to really be a huge budget kind of eater. But you could kind of, anyone could add this and can kind of follow in FatFaze's footsteps. As long as you're confident that your product that you've got is good, you could go down this route and have, and just copy what FatFaze have done and potentially see your conversion rates increase from that. I mean, one of the main things I saw from this, from like my e-commerce background, for example, was that not only has it increased the conversion rate, which is wicked, they're getting a lower volume of returns. So they've increased that conversion rate and lowered that return rate. And it's just the revenue that will be generated from doing that, from doing such a basic thing, essentially, is astounding. And it's such a game changer of something that you look at it and you go, that's a no-brainer. Like, that, everyone should be doing this.
Yeah.
I think, on that point as well, this is something that will have likely been tested and tested and had multi variants, and this is the arguably the one that's come out on top. So it sort of goes to show the impact of conversion rate optimization as well, and sort of tests don't have to be huge to have an impact.
Yeah, so I think probably closing points there are, there's probably not too much, I guess, in terms of investment of what you need to do. It's just a case of time. And yeah, have an open mind and think about what are some things that you can do to your website to really show people that you as a business can be trusted and that you already have a lot of great clients and customers that really appreciate what you do.
And look to big brands as an example of what can be done. This is something that, as Matt said, they've probably tested and spent quite a lot of marketing budget testing this to get the one that comes out on top. Look to it, look at the one that comes out on top, implement that without all the testing budget. Basically, well, I guess I'm saying steal people's ideas, but yeah, steal big brands' ideas.
Was it imitation? Brand. Imitation is the best form of flattery.
Yeah, exactly. Like these guys got massive and they will have been copying bigger brands in their heyday, And I'm sure Fat Face have copied a million and one things that Nike have done. And I'm sure Nike have copied a million and one things that Adidas have done. And it's what these people will do. And what you could do as smaller marketers as well is kind of take this research and apply it to yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's probably going to close us out for another week here at More Than Digital Marketing. Because we were talking about reviews, I thought it'd probably be a good place to throw in a request for if you're listening to the show and you enjoy it. Yeah, we'd love to have a 5-star review. You can do that on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Be great to just get some feedback, what people think. That will definitely help us sort of grow our audience and reach some new people. And we really just quite enjoy sort of this format of, yeah, having a chat. And if you do have, I guess, any questions, we've actually got a new email address, which is podcast@opticsolutions.co.uk. If you have any questions, any feedback, any thoughts, anything you'd love us to talk about or get into, it would be really great if you could drop us an email. So that email again was optics. No, it wasn't. that email was podcast@opticsolutions.co.uk. podcast@opticsolutions.co.uk.
As you can tell, we heed our own kind of words here, and we have been doing applying our own learnings to what we're doing as we go as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. But hey, every day's a school day, ultimately. We also have been talking about a Twitter. And what is that Twitter handle, Luke?
Optics Podcast.
At
Optics Podcast.
Perfect. At Optics Podcast. Drop us a tweet. We'll probably be sharing some of the links on that channel. And again, evolving as it goes. But yeah, thank you very much for joining us again. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks a lot.